If I was Universal Time, stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Muslim worshippers celebrated early Thursday Israel's decision to remove additional security measures from entrances to the Al-Aqsa Mosque in Jerusalem. Hundreds converged near the holy site in Jerusalem's Old City after Israel removed railings and scaffolding where cameras were previously mounted from an entrance to the Haram el-Sharif compound, known to Jews as the Temple Mount. Metal detectors were removed Tuesday. University of San Francisco analyst Stephen Zunas said he understands the deep emotions displayed since the security apparatus was installed after the killing of two Israeli policemen nearly 2 weeks ago.
The symbolism of Al-Aqsa Mosque being the third holiest site in Islam, and the feelings of after 50 years of occupation and seeing so much else taken away from them, it certainly has led quite a few Palestinians to protest and mobilize on what they see as the latest affront by Israeli occupation forces.
Muslim leaders said they would decide Thursday whether worshippers could return to the mosque for prayers. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has warned hard-won gains leading to peace in Central African Republic are in jeopardy by increased ethnic and sectarian fighting. He condemned the killing Tuesday of two UN peacekeepers in the southeast town of Bangassou. Another Moroccan peacekeeper was killed Sunday. The UN chief's spokesman is Farhan Haq.
This incident brings to nine the number of peacekeepers killed in service in Bangassou since the beginning of the year.
The uptick in violence displaced tens of thousands since April. One of Africa's poorest countries is trying to emerge from 4 years of violence sparked by a 2013 coup. This is VOA News. The U.S. Wednesday announced sanctions against 13 senior officials of Venezuela's government and state oil company as the opposition staged a two-day general strike aimed at preventing Sunday's vote to create a new assembly to rewrite the country's constitution.
Este grupo de compatriotas.
President Nicolas Maduro described the new sanctions by the U.S. as insolent. The opposition-led strike is to end with a protest march Friday in the capital, Caracas. La Trobe University analyst Raul Sanchez Urabari said it's impossible to predict what the outcome will be.
The pressure has never been this much on the regime to change course. We're in a completely unprecedented situation, but it will be a matter of waiting to see what will happen by Sunday.
Mr. Maduro has vowed to press ahead with a vote that the opposition has warned will institutionalize dictatorship. Protesters clashed with security forces again Wednesday, leaving at least one dead. President Donald Trump Wednesday said the U.S. military will no longer allow transgender people to serve. The decision reverses a policy put in place by the previous Obama administration. The White House spokesperson is Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
The president has a lot of support for all Americans and certainly wants to protect all Americans at all times. The president's expressed concern since this Obama policy came into effect, but he's also voiced that this is a very expensive and disruptive policy. And based on consultation that he's had with his national security team, came to the conclusion that it erodes military readiness and unit cohesion and made the decision based on that.
The decision drew immediate criticism. Florida Republican Congresswoman Elena Ross Leighton said no American should be prohibited from serving the nation. A day after getting a green light to debate health care in America, Senate Republicans voted down a proposal to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act known as Obamacare. It's a political setback for President Trump, who campaigned on repeal. Nine Republicans joined all Democrats to block a proposal to replace Obamacare with a system that cuts back the government's role in health care. In Nigeria, suspected Boko Haram insurgents ambushed an oil exploration convoy in the north, killing at least 10, including nine soldiers, and abducting several others who were later rescued. The state-run Nigerian National Petroleum Corporation has been surveying the potentially vast oil reserves around Lake Chad, a frequent target of Boko Haram. U.S. stocks continued their climb into record territory Wednesday amid strong corporate earnings from companies like Boeing and AT&T. The benchmark Dow Jones ended the day up nearly 100 points to 21,711. Meanwhile, policymakers at the U.S. Central Bank announced they are holding steady on a key interest rate. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, July 27th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The Nigerian Senate approved wide-ranging constitutional amendments on Wednesday.
The young people have been promoting a bill called Not Too Young to Run. The Senate amended that of the presidency from 40 to 35. The Senate from 35 to 30, and the House of Representatives to 25.
Ezenwa Nwangu is chair of the Partner for Electoral Reform in Nigeria. DRC President Joseph Kabila discusses elections and the Kasai violence with visiting UN Deputy Secretary General. And South Sudanese civil society groups say revitalization of the 2015 peace accord must include all signatories to the agreement.
It will be very challenging if the peace agreement that is going to be revitalized does not adequately capture the challenges that we have and does not adequately include all the parties to the conflict.
Raja Muhandis is executive director of the South Sudanese Network for Democracy and Elections. It appears science is finally making headway in the war against AIDS, but proposed cuts in funding could hamper this progress. And peer educators in Cameroon promote HIV testing for mothers and babies. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The Nigerian Senate on Wednesday approved wide-ranging amendments to the country's 1999 constitution affecting the presidency, elections, and women's participation in both the federal and state governments. They approved electronic voting and empowered the Independent National Elections Commission to deregister political parties over failure to secure an elective seat. The senators voted in favor of immunity for members of parliament for words spoken or written during plenary sessions, but the Senate rejected a proposal to devolve more powers to the states. Ezenwa Nwangu is chair of the Partner for Electoral Reform in Nigeria, an NGO. He says the Senate also approved an amendment making it obligatory for the president to deliver a State of the Nation address to a joint session of the National Assembly.
Perhaps the more serious issues are the State of the Nation address, which in their own estimation, they will want a situation in which there will be a pool of the state houses of assembly and the national assembly, and through that the president will have what you call the State of the Union address. And that's been drawn from what happens in the United States and in Kenya and even Ghana and some other African countries. The situation now is that the president does not have a State of Union address. What he does is when he comes to present the budget, the two chambers of the National Assembly comes together for that to happen. But there is no State of the Union address as we speak.
There's an amendment also for the legislators giving themselves immunity for acts, I think, committed in the course of their duty. What do you make of that? Are they trying to protect themselves from criminality?
In fact, a lot of Nigerians wanted Section 308 in the Constitution to be expunged, which even gives the immunity to governors and even the president. So it's really befuddling that the Senate could, in spite of everything that we know, be thinking of giving immunity to themselves.
I was reading in the Nigerian papers yesterday about a protest that took place in the halls of the parliament by young people. Was there any amendment that had to do with age limit for young people?
The young people have been promoting a bill called Not Too Young to Run. The Not Too Young to Run bill is seeking for the removal of age for contesting elections in Nigeria. The Senate amended that of the presidency from 40 to 35, the Senate from 35 to 30, and the House of Representatives to 25. Well, that perhaps is some progress, but it did not completely align with the desire of young people who wanted the fact that if they are 18 years and they can vote, then there is no reason to criminalize their aspiration. So whatever it is, it's some little progress, but my sense is that it will prolong the terror of coming generation who will think that they were betrayed. Because if you reduce from 40 to 35, very soon people will begin to question what will be the rationale if a 35-year-old can contest for president, what stops a 30-year-old from aspiring?
I came across two amendments that had to do with voting in Nigeria. I think one of them dealt with electronic voting, and the other one that the Independent National Elections Commission could deregister political parties over failure to secure an elective seat. Talk to us about this electronic voting.
If you followed the 2015 general election, there were issues, litigations about whether the smart card reader that was introduced was the machine or whether it was the electronic machine. That had been so heated an argument, so the Senate had to clear that confusion as to the fact that we cannot do electronic voting in Nigeria. So if that hurdle is eventually cleared, it means that we can begin to work towards electronic voting, which is what obtains in Washington where you are at this point in time. So we don't have to close our businesses, we don't have to shut down the economy because we want to vote. The Senate also passed independent candidacy. But while they did that, they now went further to talk about the registering political parties that didn't meet certain criteria. We think that that is restricting the political space because you cannot legislate political parties. You can't decree political parties in and out of existence. It is the inalienable right of citizens to form parties, but you can set criteria for them appearing on the ballot. If you want to appear on the ballot, then you see certain conditions. But the registering political parties, in our view, will be anti-democratic.
Ezenwa Mwangu is the chair of the Partner for Electoral Reform in Nigeria. He was speaking with me from Abuja. Democratic Republic of Congo President Joseph Kabila held discussions this week in Kinshasa with Deputy UN Secretary General Amina Mohamed. Information Minister Lambert Mende says the two discussed in UN support for elections and the violence in the country's Kasai region. Deputy Secretary General Mohamed said she conveyed UN support and encouragement for peaceful and inclusive elections in the DRC. Meanwhile, the UN appointed three human rights experts on Wednesday to lead an international investigation into the killings in the Kasai region. Information Minister Mende says his government looks forward to the arrival of the UN experts to begin working with their counterparts from the DRC judiciary.
They shared about the situation basically of the violence in the central Kasai province where we are cooperating with the UN MONUSCO force, and about also the endeavor by our government to reduce the violence against women whenever there are conflict in our countries, and also about the fate of the two poor people of UN who found death in Kasai. And the president briefed her about the situation of the fact-finding situation where some people have been arrested already, some have been already brought to the court, others are being on run, they are searching for them, and the Deputy Secretary General seemed to have appreciated what she learned from the president.
Did the Deputy Secretary General at least convey to your president or your government about United Nations and its support for the peaceful elections in your country?
Yes, we do appreciate the assistance that is being given by MONUSCO to the Electoral Commission. But, you know, this is a problem regarding Electoral Commission. Neither the president nor the government have powers or responsibility to organize, to handle elections as such. But the president appreciated the cooperation between MONUSCO and the Electoral Independent Commission of Congo, because the Electoral Commission have managed to enroll already 35 million electors out of 41 million with, it is attended to enroll in the registers.
Back to the crisis in the Kasai, Wednesday, the United Nations named three human rights experts to lead an international investigation into the killings and other crimes in the Kasai. I know there's been kind of tension between your government and the United Nations. I think your government has said your own judicial system can handle the investigation. Your comment on this naming of experts to investigate?
Things are going very well, James, because yesterday we received a communication from American and British ambassadors who told our Minister of Human Rights that the High Commissioner of Human Rights from Geneva has appointed three international experts, one from Canada, one from Mauritania, and a third one from Senegal. They are to arrive here on 3rd of September to work with their colleagues, experts, and the judiciary of the DRC. And we think that this is a good achievement.
Lambo Mende is Information Minister of the Democratic Republic of Congo. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kinshasa. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Barton in Washington. Today is Thursday, July 27th. Please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 16 minutes past the hour. South Sudanese civil society activists warn that unless the IGAD-led process to revitalize the 2015 peace agreement includes principal signatories of the accord, the exercise will probably fail to restore peace and stability across the country. Foreign ministers of the Intergovernmental Authority for Development, known as IGAD, concluded an extraordinary meeting on Monday in the South Sudan capital, Juba, aimed at revitalizing the country's 2015 peace agreement. As Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba, the ministers decided not to invite exiled rebel leader Riek Machar to the next meeting of stakeholders to the peace agreement.
Ethiopian Foreign Minister Wakene Gebeye, who said at the end of Monday's IGAD Council of Ministers consultative meeting in Juba that exiled rebel leader Riek Machar will not be invited to the next meeting of stakeholders to the peace agreement.
We already agreed, not as the heads of the state, that in the process, all opposition groups, including Riek Machar's ideas, the representative of Riek Machar can be represented in this process. For the time being, physically, we are not inviting the Riek Machar.
But South Sudanese activists say the decision not to invite Machar is wrong and throws into question whether the regional bloc IGAD is operating as a neutral entity. Rajab Muhandis, executive director of South Sudanese Network for Democracy and Elections, Osunde, says any revitalization process that excludes certain parties to the agreement risks restoring status quo in the country.
It will be very challenging if the peace agreement that is going to be revitalized does not adequately capture the challenges that we have and does not adequately include all the parties to the conflict.
At Monday's extraordinary meeting, IGAD's Council of Ministers passed a number of resolutions to revitalize the peace deal, such as bring all opposition stakeholders to the table. While the IGAD communique did not mention Machar by name, Gebeye, who made it clear he would not be invited to the next stakeholders meeting. Another activist, Jame David Kolok, executive director for Foundation for Democracy and Accountable Governance, agrees with the Muhandis, saying excluding key leaders is not the way to go.
If there are every avenues through which people like Dr. Machar, Lama Kol, people like Cirilo are part of this process, then this is a sign that this country is moving towards the path of stability. So please, we are advising all parties responsible for bringing peace in this country, including the civil society, including the citizens of this country, that we must embrace and genuinely embrace inclusivity of everybody unless we are pretending.
David says it is high time IGAD leaders renew efforts to restore calm in South Sudan. Although he welcomes some contents of the IGAD resolutions passed on Monday, David says there is nothing new. David says the revitalization process should be seen as a window of opportunity for IGAD leaders to help put an end to the conflict, adding they have achieved little in the last 22 months.
We have seen emphasis being made in regards to
this country is stopping the war. Emphasis being made in terms of the question of inclusivity. Emphasis being made in terms of ensuring that there is respect for ceasefire. Unfortunately, time is going and these things are not being realized.
Chapter 2 of the peace agreement requires a permanent cessation of hostilities and addresses all security challenges which affect ordinary citizens. Mohandis says the resolutions from the IGAD Council of Ministers do not outline the key problems that need to be fixed. JEMEC Chairman Festus Mohai, who briefed the Council on the current situation in South Sudan, said the revitalization process addressed the political realities in South Sudan and the forum should examine progress made in implementing the peace deal, determine impediments to progress, and seek concrete proposals to resolve those impediments. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Science seems to be finally starting to win in the war against the human immunodeficiency virus, also known as HIV, that causes AIDS. But experts at the Paris Conference on the Deadly Disease say proposed cuts in global funding may delay the final blow. VOA's George Putish reports.
It took 3 decades from the appearance of the first drug for slowing the onset of AIDS to today's drug cocktails that save many of the infected patients from what was inevitable death. The conference on AIDS, held this week in Paris, reflected optimism about new treatments and concern about proposed cuts in funding, especially by the U.S. government.
I want to remind you that $7 billion per year is still missing in the fight against AIDS in the world. This is the money we need to find. And thanks to our mobilization, we could assign it to the fight against AIDS.
In spite of the latest advances, the virus that causes AIDS remains a formidable enemy due to its unprecedented ability to develop resistance to drugs. New medicines keep it under control, but they are neither available nor affordable for many. Experts also suspect a large number of unreported cases.
We know we're treating 19.5 million people, but there's another 17-odd million who need treatment today. And we haven't found those people. Many of them are in regions of the world such as West Africa, Central Africa, Eastern Europe, Central Asia, that we haven't got to. So that's very concerning.
However, the conference heard many optimistic notes.
We are reaching the people in need. We are saving lives because it's not only about proving that we can put people under treatment, but also that we needed to completely change the screening.
Among the highlights is the recent news about the 10-year-old South African child born with HIV. After only a year of treatment, the child has been virus-free for more than 8 years. Citing other similar cases, as well as the promising vaccines being developed, experts say the scales may finally be tipped against the disease that so far has killed about 35 million people. George Putich, VOA News, Washington.
While promising gains have been announced during the World AIDS Conference in Paris, challenges remain. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Gaido in northern Cameroon, where identifying and treating HIV-positive mothers and babies remains difficult.
Hundreds of people have gathered here at the Yelwa Junction in northern Cameroon to listen to people living with HIV. Among the speakers is Miriam Anna, who lost her husband and 3-month-old baby 2 years ago.
Ceux qui sont dans la zone rurale, quand tu essaies même de les convaincre, plutôt la personne se dit que c'est.
She says when she tries to convince sick villagers to go with their babies for HIV screening, they argue they are bewitched by their relatives. She says she knows 3 men who died of HIV and their wives have refused to take their babies to the hospital, claiming the families are suffering from a spell. Miriam did not have prenatal care. She delivered her baby at a traditional birth attendant's home. It was only after, when she became sick, that she went to a hospital and found out she had HIV. She is now a peer educator working as part of an initiative of the Cameroonian government. In 2016, the government found 7 out of 10 women in the northern part of the country were not visiting hospitals when they were pregnant. The government reports about a third of those who did go to hospitals never showed up for their postnatal visits, even if the woman had tested positive for HIV. The job of the new peer educators is to identify pregnant women in their villages and encourage them to get medical care, even reminding them of their hospital appointments. The government says since the start of the program, 7 out of 10 pregnant women identified by peer educators now visit a hospital. The results of a mother's HIV test take just a day to be known, but newborns need a special screening, and the blood work can only be processed 1,000 kilometers away in the capital Yaoundé, says Wekan Georgette, in charge of HIV control and people living with AIDS department in Cameroon's Ministry of Health.
Les échantillons partaient de l'extrême nord pour Yaoundé.
She says it takes between 6 and 7 months for the results to be brought back from Yaoundé, and that at times the results come when some of the babies are already dead. She says they also face a specific problem of women in the north not returning with their babies for the follow-up appointments for fear of stigma. The UN Children's Fund estimates that in northern Cameroon, 40% of HIV-positive children do not receive treatment. Health officials say it is important to begin regular ARV treatment as soon as possible after diagnosis. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Gidé, Cameroon.
A Ghanaian teenager wanted to develop a video search engine that could challenge the dominance of YouTube. As Fifth Lapidus reports, he's well on his way.
Gabriel Opare is perhaps the youngest tech titan in Ghana. The 19-year-old has developed a video search engine called Mudclo.
Or I can even click on any of these, Matthew Fox, for instance, to give me a biography of Matthew Fox. I can go to other websites.
Opare says, unlike YouTube, Mudclo finds and streams videos from all over the internet.
It is a legitimate point to say that YouTube is a video hosting website. There are lots of videos there, and Mudclo is also there are lots of videos on Mudclo as well. But they are two different entities. While YouTube is a video hosting website, Mudclo combines the power of YouTube and two other video hosting websites in order to create Mudclo.
Now a student at the University of Ghana, Opare says he was inspired by his entrepreneurial classmates in high school.
Most of them were underaged, but despite their utter lack of funding, many of them really strived to create businesses. I met students who created ushering organizations, clothing lines, fashion groups, and I guess that idea really caught on with me.
He took online classes to teach himself coding and created a business he thinks can eventually go global.
That's VOA's Fifth Lapidus reporting from Washington. And that is it for this Thursday, July 27th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post-editor Samson O'Malley, I'm James Barty in Washington saying, have a lovely day, Africa. VOA.
To our audience on VOA's FM in Accra, Ghana. We are happy to announce that VOA's FM station 98.1 is back on the air with all your favorite news and programs. Tune in every day 24/7. You can also listen to VOA's radio programs on shortwaves, 6080 kilohertz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kilohertz, 19.2 meter band. We are online at voanews.com.